Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is November, is this 10?
11.
No,
11.
11. 11.
You literally just wished Inca Happy Veterans Day.
I know, but I didn't know the date. I just knew the day.
Well, it's happy, always happy. November. Isn't it always November 11th? It's always November 11th.
It's always November 11th. Always
oh,
November
is it? 11th. Oh, yeah. I didn't realize. It was, oh, no wonder. That's, yeah. Why, that's why it's on a Wednesday. Okay.
Yeah.
Because it goes on the date, not the day. Okay. Well, all happy right. Veterans Day, Inca.
Thank you very much.
To you and your patrol. Yeah.
Well, Trav's not a veteran yet. He's active military. So he's active military.
Yeah. He is a veteran, though, because he's in the war.
Oh, interesting.
That's okay.
That's a distinction.
Mm-hmm. Got you. Oh. Okay.
Did not know that. Learn something new every day.
I didn't either, actually. And I come from a military family, which I think is actually, I know more black people probably listen to this show than white people, but I think that there's become like this misconception or just people are forgetting, especially over the past 4 years with Trump, that almost all black people have vets and have military personnel and vets in the family. Like almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
I remember when, I think that really started to kind of take shape, like you said, with Trump, with the kneeling, because then you would see guys on TV like, I don't like this. My family's a military family. My dad served in Vietnam. And I used to be like, niggas, my cousin served in Vietnam. My dad was in the Navy. It became almost like serving in the military was like a white, middle class family thing. It's like, are you crazy?
I got three.
Absolutely not.
I got three first cousins who were active military. My uncle is a major in the Air Force. My grandfather was a colonel in the Army. My other grandfather wasn't an officer, but he never talked about the war. Like, he came home, he was like, I'm not talking about that shit. I'm not watching it on TV. I'm not doing none of that shit. Like, my grandmother's brothers, I think we all, like,
Everybody got family who's been in the service
And they recruited. That's the other thing, that the military actively recruited us. I don't know if they've stopped that, but they'd be at high school.
Oh no. I assure you they have not. Okay. Because I got into a little bit of an exchange with a motherfucker calling to recruit Justin.
Oh, mm-hmm. Hell no.
Yeah, like they called and I was like, nah, we good, player. And basically, dude was like, so do you have six figures put away for college?
Exactly. They sell
and
you.
And I hung up the phone.
CI bill. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I hung up the phone. But, like, when I tell you I was hot under the fucking collar, if he had said that shit in front of me, it was going to be some furniture movie.
It was lit. Yeah, that's just crazy, man. So. But again, love and respect to the veterans.
I got a shout actually, because I don't normally do shouts. I want to say some of the veterans in my family, some that are current. I think my cousin Nick is actually in Afghanistan right now.
Mm-hmm.
Wow! But like, I remember being young, and one of the like older dudes in my building, who was like a big brother to me, had gone into the military. And he came home and he was like the baddest motherfucker I thought in the world. Like, he was, airborne. This motherfucker was like taking apart guns and shit. I remember going to the beach. I had never seen anybody swim that far out in the beach. Like, I couldn't see him no more.
Wow.
Like, he was just like, he was like a fucking superhero to me. So peace to him, man. He, obviously he left the service and he, like you said, they ain't really offering motherfuckers jobs to jump out of airplanes when you come home.
Yeah.
So you might want to do something different. So Peace to him. We called him Pookie, obviously. He's like 50 years old now. He's not going by Pookie. But yeah. But peace to Elvis, man.
Grown-ass man.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, definitely. In
the family.
Sure he's going to respond to that. But that's, yeah. You know what I'm saying? But like, yeah, peace to Elvis, man. You know, he was like a big brother to me.
That service thing. My pops is a Navy guy, like I said, and like up until he got, you know, like, well, he died pretty early. He died at 65, but like he would swim, like that was his exercise because of the Navy. Yeah. Like that's what he died was his exercise. He's like, he would go to the pool like in the summer and every day and do laps, like because like you said, you get trained and it gets into your blood, whatever the service, you know, section of service you are, whatever that kind of thing is. It's like it ingrained it into your blood. I mean, Inka, you would know better than any of us. We're talking shit like we've been in
the none birth. Of that stuck with pops. Me.
Like, I know he was like, that water thing was.
Yeah.
Oh, none of it stuck with you? Inka was like, we're talking like we served.
Before we get to an Inka question, I do also want to shout out friend to the show, Kels KMGZ.
Oh, yes. The Marine.
Yeah, I want to shout her out. Semper Fi-ness. But Inka, I was asking you a question before we got on air about because you're out of service now, but Travis.
Now, what branch did you serve in, Inka?
Army.
You were Army. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And Travis Marine?
Travis Army.
Oh, he's Army. Okay. He's still active. I was asking you about whether or not there are deployment caps now, because at one point there weren't. For a minute, and you were saying that was when you were in service, there weren't deployment caps anymore, or for a minute.
Yeah, we definitely went back to back 15 months at a time. I think we came home for 4 weeks or something.
Wow.
And then we're right back. But I mean, people like Travis is mad at me when I make light of the service that I did during wartime, but a lot of it was spent at command. I was in Tampa, Florida for a long time. I didn't go forward to, you know, the bad places until they got bad. So,
but you went.
Yeah, but you still went.
I went.
You was there and you survived. God bless. Like, yeah, don't downplay that shit.
Yeah, no, don't downplay. That's like my cousin. She was like, "Y'all, I'm never gonna be on the front lines." And cut to her ass being on the front lines. Like, yeah, it was exactly.
In a war like the Iraq and Afghanistan war, in that conflict, everything was the front lines. You know what I mean? Like you saw the news where people were getting blown up in churches and school buses and stuff like that. You never knew who exactly was the enemy. So that front line shit is very real, and it might be you, but
nobody's safe kind of thing.
Nobody's safe.
Yeah, no,
she asked me about deployment caps though.
Yeah, go ahead.
So we didn't have them when I was in, but they saw the horrible things that did to families and the divorce rate and like the people that would come home and, you know, your wife is pregnant by another dude. And, you know, we knew a guy that like killed his wife and the baby like a week after he came home that was at the same base as us. So thank God somebody stepped in and like changed these laws, because holy shit, like you're really destroying everybody in your path by making it for 2 years at a time. What was I about to say? Oh, Jeff, you were saying something.
I was going to say, like, when you said you were home, you had a deployment, and then you were home for, like, 4 weeks or so, and then went right back for 15 more months. When you came home for those 4 weeks, did you kind of feel like an alien? Was it kind of weird to be home or anything?
Every time I came home, I felt like an alien. Even, so, basic training, we came home for Christmas, and I would literally just be, like, standing by the dinner table, waiting for instructions. Like, I was
standing.
Brainwashed,
like at attention, like you was at attention.
Just always at attention. I went in at 17 though, so it was like a different world and time. You know, I'm out. What was that? 21 years ago, when they could still yell at you and make you do push-ups and stuff. But the Army has changed a lot. It's it's not the Army I was in.
It's not as hardcore as it was.
No, I laugh at Travis all the time. Like.
Yeah, I would imagine that's a good thing. There was one point where I definitely considered, like when I was in school, I had a lot of friends who were in the Army or were in ROTC and about to go into the Army. And I definitely considered signing up just so I could get the money to get an apartment and a car. And because that's the way my mom was working at 18, right? Like y'all got apartments and cars because y'all got money. and I could go to basic training and like lose some weight and shit. That was the way my mom was working. So fortunately, I didn't do that dumb shit because I knew I wasn't.
Nigga was going to take the army diet.
Fort Sumter was right there. I was like, I'm going to go to basic. I'm going to come back, be all slim and shit. And you know,
I did that. It lasted for like 4 weeks.
Campus and
At one point, I was thinking about doing the Navy because I wanted to travel. And my pops like shut that shit down.
Oh yeah,
he was like, you're not going to the Navy. I was like, no, I think I want to travel.
Well, you would have been a whole different person coming out of me.
Because I know a couple of cats I went to college with. One of my boys, particularly Greg, he came with us. We came in together, and then he left and went into the service. And he came, but he went through National Guard, and then he came back, and he definitely was different. You know, he was still my man, but he just I could see the shift in having dealt with whatever he dealt with. And then I remember like he was stationed, fortunately for him, in Brooklyn, and like every once a month he would have to drive to Brooklyn and do like that weekend duty.
I joined originally as a reservist and then decided to make the active duty shift after September 11th. I joined in 99. Let me just everybody knows my age. Wow. I joined for college money.
and you went active after
get away from my mama. And then I saw it was real like money in it. And I was good at what they wanted me to do. So I would just show up at the reserve center like, what's up? Let me get some orders. What y'all want me to do? And that's how I ended up traveling literally all over the world. Like, I think my first trip might have been to Egypt.
Damn.
Oh, wow.
Or like Kenya. So I mean, the travel was incredible. Made me more worldly.
She told about me, nigga. You need to write a book.
Clearly,
I have lived 15 lives.
Yeah, jeez.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad to have you. Shit, we're gonna start tapping into some of that shit. You know.
I think Inca froze on us. We'll give her a second.
She'll probably back up. Yeah. So let's get started with the show. Well, we have started the show, but let's get started with the first time. I want to like do kind of like what we did last week, which is let's talk the politics stuff first because it's so much going on. And the last time we had the last show we had, which was last Thursday we taped, we hadn't had an election result yet. And we didn't know, we knew where it was leaning, but it hadn't been called. The networks are still milking it and nobody wanted to call it. And your man was spazzing on Twitter as he always does. And so last Saturday, Saturday past, around what, 12:30-ish?
Yeah.
The networks called it for Biden. Pennsylvania flipped to Biden, and that those 20 electoral votes took him to 273, which obviously is over the line of 270, and the way it's set up, it can only be a tie at 269. So if you go 270, there's no way the other person can win. And Biden became the president-elect. And I was actually at the crib. I had been out in the morning, and I was at the crib. I was going to get ride my bike because this weather this weekend was incredible.
It was a beautiful day.
It was like June, you know, May or something. And I just heard people starting to yell outside, and you know, people hitting pots and pans, and cars honking, and people just going crazy. And I knew right away that it had called, and then I sat there and watched maybe for about an hour or so on TV and watched everybody. You know, all these different cities dancing in the streets and all that. So where were you guys when you heard the election was called?
Asleep. I woke up. Because I slept. I told you guys when we taped last week that I like worked the polls on Tuesday and it was an early day and a late day. And I have been up. I finally turned on the news Wednesday evening when they called Michigan, when they tentatively called Michigan, which was like in the evening at some point, and I had the news on 24 hours until Friday. Just watching, not only just watching the returns come in, but I want to give a shout out to MSNBC, Steve Konecki, who was doing their
who all the women numbers love.
In real time. Oh my god, it was like watching A Beautiful Mind, and shit was fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
And at one point,
it was fascinating. I was also like, yo, what is he using to stay the fuck awake? Because I was like, this motherfucker.
Your man had the same pants on.
He was giving up that junior high school science teacher swag.
And like, And CNN would be cutting to video at some point, but MSNBC was legit going overnight, right?
He's doing math on the board, like
he got his pen in his mouth, and he's on the computer. Like, it was fascinating to watch. And just I stopped watching CNN during the 2016 election because they were giving Trump entirely too much airtime for me, which was a Jeff Zucker situation. Jeff Zucker, who, by the way, for those who don't know, the head of CNN is the same guy who produced The Apprentice and put Trump on The Apprentice, which is why they on purpose gave Trump so much light during the 2016 election, because he was looking at it from an entertainment angle and not from a hard news angle. And I've always blamed CNN in part for the legitimacy of Trump, because instead of calling him out on bullshit, because everybody assumed he would never actually be the nominee, it was like, we can let this rock for entertainment value. But it ended up giving him enough space to become the nominee and eventually the president. So anyway, that said, I'd abandoned CNN for MSNBC long before, and also because Lawrence O'Donnell and Rachel Maddow were two of the first news journalists to really just call Trump on his bullshit regularly. But I burnt myself out on the news cycle so much in 2015 and 16 that after Trump took office, I just couldn't do it anymore. I didn't want to see him on my screen. I didn't want to see Kellyanne on my fucking screen. I can't listen to him for long periods of time. And during this election season, I also had to limit my news, because like I said, I was on a 24-hour news cycle during the last election cycle. So, but once I turned it on, MSNBC had, you know, Black people coming through to talk. Brian Williams was back to being the Brian Williams that I motherfucking love. I also really love Nicole Wallace, who was John McCain's campaign manager, one of John McCain's campaign advisors, senior advisor.
She also worked for George
Bush, the press secretary for the Bush administration, right? And of course, we got Joyanne. So I just really actually was entertained watching MSNBC as everything was coming in. And they were being very clear, like, Trump is lying, his people are lying. But also, like, this is why we're being overly cautious. This is why we're taking our time.
Yeah, people were pissed off, but their strategy in hindsight was smart, in that they didn't want to call it too early, because that would have possibly given Trump and his people ammunition to say it was rigged and the networks were against him because they called it so early. On the other side, which was interesting, is Fox News was
Arizona. They called Arizona like 2 days earlier than everybody.
Yeah, he was pissed off and, you know, saying that they kind of betrayed him or whatever. But
So I finally went to sleep Friday, because I finally got sick on Friday. And I thought I might have had that Rona. I think I texted y'all, but I might not text y'all till Saturday, because I had a headache. My throat was starting to hurt. And I went to eat some food and I couldn't taste the food. And it wasn't like the congestion couldn't taste the food, but like I literally, not the taste was muted. Like I literally couldn't taste it. So I went to sleep for a couple of hours. When I woke up, I felt a little bit better. And over the next course of a couple of days, I felt better. But basically, I finally had to take my ass to sleep on Friday. So I woke up at like 2:30 on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. You missed. Well, it was still popping, but you missed the initial.
Yeah, people were hitting me like, yo, where are you? Because they couldn't believe I hadn't posted anything yet. But like, I turned on the news and literally like the world.
Oh, yeah. The world is on fire.
It's like, imagine that this guy, Nkosa, he posted that he was in Nigeria in 98 when the dictator died. And he said the celebration that broke out there was literally the same as what broke out on Saturday.
Yeah, like the witch's ding dong, the witch is dead.
It was ding dong, the witch is dead. It was fucking everybody rejoiced from The Wiz. New Yorkers were outside of Trump Tower fucking chilling. And the fact that he's not coming back here,
yeah, he's going to Florida.
New Yorkers really love. Like, that nigga is not coming back.
Where was you at, bro?
Yeah.
I was in, I was here. I stopped paying attention to that shit like a long time ago. Like, I just wasn't as enthralled. And I mean, I texted you because I was kind of like, I was actually in Montclair when it kind of was officially done. And I swung by. It was like beautiful that day. So
the weather was crazy.
I was in the street a little bit. I was riding mm-hmm. around, niggas singing Isley's. And
steps in the dark.
Yeah, so I figure, all right, I'm going to go get something, you know, get something to eat. And I'm hearing all these horns and shit. So the first thing, when I hear horns like that, like I'm thinking motherfucker blowing at me. So I'm ready to pull over.
Yeah, yeah. Right? So, Broadway whip somebody ass.
I'm like, yo, you ass. Motherfucker might just turn green. Nigga, relax. Right? So.
This nigga great whip somebody ass.
I go through the process, and then I saw everybody, and I checked my phone at that point because I had the election results. You know, Google had a great map.
Yeah.
So I would just go in and refresh that, and when I went in, I refreshed it. I was like, okay, they must have called it, and that's what's going on. And and I texted you guys. It felt very.
This nigga.
It was. I just wasn't feeling that whole thing, man. Like it just wasn't clicking over for me. It wasn't that I wasn't that I was unhappy that he won. It just felt like this celebration felt very much like almost like a we did it, like a we showed our parents type vibe.
I didn't feel that.
I'm saying where I was.
Oh, where you were? Yeah. Okay.
Where I was, there was a lot of young people, and the energy felt very like we did it. You know, it reminded me of how we would see those foreign clips of when a dictator's overthrown people are honking horns and shit like that.
That's what it felt like.
Literally what it was.
But you know, for me, man, it's like that does, you know, none of that shit really changed in terms of the things that he tapped into in American society.
Well, that's
and that's what I felt. And so me, listen, I get it. I'm not an 18-year-old. This wasn't my first time. This wasn't my first rodeo at the polls. Mm. So I understand why they would have felt, you know, inclined to feel celebratory in this way. I'm 44. I've seen a lot of shit. And I know that none of this shit is stopping. Right. And and that's really what, and that's really kind of what I wanted to say, but I didn't want to be old dude.
Right. you let me get off my long nigga.
Because you would have won Sean where niggas was like, can we have 2 days to be happy, nigga?
I get it. So I just, so what I did was I checked out.
Yeah.
Okay. And it made it a little easier for me. And I've had conversations with the kids about that. And I keep saying kids, but they're like, you know, Justin's a fucking full grown adult. And Jordan will be going off to college next year. But we have these sort of conversations. And so I felt good, but not in the celebratory way that a lot of other people felt. Right. So, you know, God bless. And I came home and had a cigar.
What about you, Inca? Where was you at?
I think you guys make me really envious of not living in a big city with a lot of Black people. Yeah. Because when I tell you could hear a pin drop, like nobody was in the streets. Like these people,
they shook. They prayed.
All my neighbors have put their American flags back up, but like. Other than that, like everybody is in their thoughts and prayers right now.
Your neighbors are waiting for him to decertify the Pennsylvania votes. I mean, the thing though, going back to what you were saying, Sean, about celebration, for me there was two things. The first thing, there was a celebration about just Trump himself, right? Because he was just a uniquely horrible person who was never fit to hold office of any kind in the first place, right? But you're right, there is a deeper rooted problem that he is a symptom of, and I do think that there are not enough people who really recognize that he was the symptom and not the problem. But the relief I felt was so palpable, right? Like one of the other reasons why I slept so late on Saturday was because when Biden gave his initial address on Friday night, which was a keep cool, it's fine, we know it's probably us. We gonna handle it. It's all good. That shit was so reassuring. Mm-hmm. And hearing calm, measured, thoughtful calm, right? It was almost like ASMR. It was like, I really felt like Biden is approaching us, is treating us like a new foster parent who's getting kids who've been in, like, you know, abusive homes,
traumatized,
now coming to a new home. Like, he literally is handling us like we're traumatized, because we are. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think I realized how much so until he spoke on Friday night. And I was like, yo, I forgot what this shit sounds like.
It's supposed to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturday, watching the victory speeches, I was sobbing, and I was sobbing even more so than more so than when Obama won, because I never doubted that Obama was going to win the first time. Like, that shit wasn't even a question in my mind, right? But, like, I realized the little things. Little kids on stage. These two motherfuckers look like they actually fuck with each other. The two families who clearly fuck with each other. Mm-hmm. Warmth, compassion, references to other people, to the fucking families of COVID-19, to their loss, like, all of these things, just, again, like I said, little bits of humanity, mm-hmm. and warmth, and just genuine, like, leadership. Even the fact that VP-elects usually do not speak when the president-elect is giving their victory speech. As much as Obama platformed Biden didn't speak. So also just even the way he's positioning Kamala, like, mm-hmm. I was really sobbing because I was sobbing in part because I really still don't think people understand that Trump's first term was a test, and had he been in office a second time,
the damage
would have been fucking irreparable. And yeah. All I could think was, like, I never want to be that close to a dictatorship a fucking again. And to be honest,
I don't know that we're at a point where everything that he's done is irreparable.
It would have been even, we would have been even further. Like, I don't think we would have seen a free election in 2024. I don't think it would have happened, you know?
And that's the part of me that felt the worst about, you know, I didn't want to squash those kids' dreams, mm-hmm. but I wanted to say, like, America's a fucked up place, and you guys will learn that as you get older, and you're going to understand that they're going to, because we still have the issues of the Senate, right? Like, they are still, mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell and those guys are still hell-bent on blocking everything they can, yeah. and stopping everything they can until they can get that White House again, right? Like, this is, I didn't want to be that guy, but it just felt very short-sighted. I'm also a guy that believes in when your check is cleared, not when you've deposited
the money.
I'm going to win the check.
Waiting for January 20th.
So, yes. So January 20, when he puts the hand on the Bible and we're all good, and if need be, Secret Service or military personnel have to drag that fucking wide hip fluffy tail motherfucker out of there, then I'm gonna be okay. But until then, I'm not really sure.
The relief that I felt was very much the representation in the White House. So, military family, Black woman, people who have been touched by the, what is it, mass incarceration, and seeing what that does to families, people who understand education and know that we need somebody in charge of it that, I don't know, might be a teacher, like, stuff like that, you know, our president having foreign policy and diplomacy experience is huge for my family, because yes. Trump was starting a war or, you know, creating some sort of enemy every other week, and that directly mm-hmm. affects us. Like, my husband would have to go and deal with that shit. So just having somebody in the White House who knows what the fuck they are doing, literally, like, if there is a fishing line from the tip of my shoulders to my earlobe, like, it loosened up when mm-hmm. I heard mm-hmm. the news. Like, I haven't felt that tension in my body since then. And I can't really explain it any other way. And I wanted to, like, celebrate and pop champagne. And I know the work continues and blah, 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 blah. Like, it felt like we had adults in charge again, and I could actually trust the people whose life, like, my life is in your hands.
Yeah.
And
for me, I understand everything that bruh's saying. But for me, I just felt like, and I'm hoping, I don't know, cause I didn't do a poll or anything, but I hope people kind of thought like this. It was, for me, it was just like, yo, for Saturday, just for Saturday, I'm gonna rock out with this shit. Again, like Inga said, it's mad work to do, it's mad fucked up shit that could even happen between now and Jan 20. So no, I was not in the place of like, oh, every happy days are here again. It wasn't that, but it was just like for that one day, for those 24 hours, that Saturday, it felt, like you said, it felt lighter, it felt better, it felt hopeful. And I rode my bike. I rode my bike, rode all around the city, rode Central Park. And it was interesting. Central Park, I haven't seen Central Park that packed since pre-COVID.
Yeah.
It was packed like a Sunday in June. It was Times Square, like, you know, Columbus Circle, all that. Because people just, again, the weather was great, and people just kind of came outside to kind of just celebrate.
We've all been in that collective trauma, so you
exactly
that joy to like rinse the taste away from.
Yeah, people laying on the grass. People were talking. Yeah. Like if you talk to somebody, they'd be smiling. You know, somebody would walk by. There were all these little kind of mini, you know, celebration demonstrations. People would walk by, honk their horn, everybody would be like, "Yeah!" Like it was again. It was just like that collective, you know, trauma was lifted for Saturday again. And nobody's being you know, naive to think that
I was
lit.
Bro would have jumped out the car. Sunflower seeds,
looking
at
you.
Yeah,
like y'all
need
to
what's
been
happening.
But I think, you know, somebody said this in a meme, and I think somebody was like, now we can just go back to the old fashioned racism we grew up with type shit.
Yes.
But it's also a matter of it's also like Biden and Kamala aren't the solution, but they're the first step in us being able
to do anything, right?
Yeah. So it was more just kind of like, at least we know we're in a position where we can do something. You know, there are things to do, but at least we're in a position where we can do something. Because honestly, even with Trump shenanigans right now, they are extremely alarming. And I've been the main nigga who's been saying for 4 years, he is not going to leave the White House. He is not going to accept the election results. And people have been like, well, they'll drag him out. And I'm like, who the fuck is they? Because I had lost hope that there was anybody who was ever going to check him, because I had not seen anybody check him. But Biden's response, the fact that like this nigga's just moving forward, like,
yeah, we got work to do. I ain't got time.
Yeah. He's like, on Monday, we got
the meeting.
I know how that shit works better than you do. I'm gonna keep it moving. One monkey ain't stopping no show. And part of that is obviously strategic, because it's to signal to Trump, like, you've lost power. It's
Nigga, you playing like Steve Wonder said, you're playing by yourself, nigga. Like,
exactly.
You're over here doing all this shit, and nobody's even paying attention to what you're doing.
But for the first time in 4 years, I feel like there are adults in the room who are working, even if it's not visible to me, to make sure that, you know, somebody doesn't run like ramrod over the Constitution. This is the first time I feel confident in that in a very long time. And I've been surprised at how, like, not, are you motherfuckers watching? Like, I'm usually one of the main ones, like, are y'all watching this shit? Like, are y'all watching what he's doing? And right now, I'm like, this nigga's clowning. It'll be all right. You know, so. And,
no, I saw today that
work, but to some point,
yeah,
there's a lot of work to do. We have work to do to the midterms. We have work to do to
the election is still happening in January to get those two Senate seats,
you know, and shift the Senate.
Georgia also has a recount coming. Like, shit ain't over, and there's such a long road to go. And the Biden-Harris campaign have a dual challenge ahead of them. One is that there is a lot to clean up. You know, Biden has to address COVID immediately.
He has to
rebuild relationships with our allies, who all like were immediately like, "Welcome back, nigga."
Yeah.
Good to see you.
Yeah, they have fireworks in London.
Yo,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. They were ringing
the cathedral bells. Sure.
Exactly. Let us feel good, nigga. Nigga, Saint Marco was like,
I ain't never liked that little nigga anyway.
I saw today that Trump apparently has not been to a COVID meeting in months.
Of course not.
And he hasn't been. He hasn't read any of his daily briefings in like about 2 months. But basically,
but that's why that transition doesn't matter. Like people, so what, are like, oh my like, god, the Trump.
What I'm saying is like he's not doing anything. He's literally doing nothing right now.
He's
not
pouting.
This is what's happening right now. What's happening right now is when Marcus told old boy, do the commercial on your own.
Yeah, exactly.
And he can't be, you know what I'm saying? So who the fuck knows who's making decisions right now?
Nobody.
We don't know who the fuck is signing shit. People, they probably forging his name on shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're probably putting shit in front of him. He thinking he's signing golf documents. Yeah, this motherfucker signing all sorts of shit.
But what one person did say is that, you know, he has been making some high level
Security
changes, and people have two minds. One is that he's putting people in position who, like, because the armed forces have said they weren't going to get involved in a transition situation. So there's that, but also people who can gain access to a certain level of security to destroy documents that will incriminate him for federal indictment, which is possible. I don't know. He also could just be pouting and being a bitch. But
he could be setting up his transition to sell those documents.
Oh, that's
he's a raggedy piece of shit, and so is his family and all of the other hangers on. And it would not shock or surprise me at all if he sold classified documents.
A garage sale.
He's in a mountain of debt.
Yes, he's in a mountain of debt, and he will absolutely sell it, and he will absolutely step over the body of soldiers if need be. He has no problem with that.
Yeah. So, I know it makes for good news. I mean, it's happening, so it's not like it's fake, but it also makes for good news to kind of, you know, get people nervous about the lack of the lack of transition is that Trump is doing, but for some reason, I think it is because of Biden's experience.
Biden just came out of West Wing 4 years.
Yeah, ago. He's like, I'm not really worried. They asked Joe yesterday. He said, "What are you going to do if the Senate doesn't want to work with you?" And he was like, "They will." You know what I'm saying? He's tripping. He's like, "Nigga, like, first of all, people kind of seem to forget or whatever, but people." This guy was a senator for 40-some years. He knows these people. Ain't he a new guy? He knows these things. He worked with these people, blah, 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 blah. And I think a lot of people have called him on the low. And I think that he's also probably getting some kind of information and stuff like that he can't get from the Trump team from other people on the low.
Well, I was gonna say,
like, yo, nigga, like, yo, this is what they said in the meeting.
Also no information that he could. I think what people are missing about the transition, because somebody tried to hit me with but the transition, Trump won't do the transition. And this person was a Bernie supporter, so they were hating anyway. I was like, do y'all understand that the Trump team did not do their transition? They never came all the way up to full White House protocols. Not only that, whereas usually the transition is more than anything else about preserving continuity. The Trump White House did not have continuity. Their shit changed from week to fucking week. So that isn't even an issue, right? And the other advantage that the Biden team has is that they ran the entire general election not from campaign offices, not being in the same space, not being together with each other face to face. So they've learned how to work remotely. Right? But also, like you said, Biden knows all these people. Like Biden already has his
COVID. And so does Kamala.
Yeah, Biden already has his COVID task force back together. He knows how the fuck shit is supposed to go. He got people he can get on the phone. He can call former presidents. He doesn't have too much.
Yeah, he's interviewing people right now.
This
for the
is
cabinet.
His life. He's been doing this since he was 29 years old.
This is what I'm saying. This
Trump
is what he does.
Cabinet is largely empty still, and the people who are in it are in acting positions. So it's not even like they have to worry about cabinet transition. And in terms of the COVID, people are like, but it's a pandemic. Trump and them ain't got a COVID strategy. So it's like, it's not like there's even something that needs to be passed off on that. Whatever information they would give him.
Fauci and they're hitting him with the color purple shit. I may be black, but I'm still here. I'm still here.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a little nervous for the next, I think it's 6 weeks or so.
But I am worried
excited.
I am worried about the lack of learnings that us as a people seem to have taken away from the last 4 years in terms of disinformation, in terms of what real election and voting strategy looks like. Like the contrarian niggas who keep talking about they want to burn the system down and rebuild it, but have no inkling. Like, that's my new shit, is like, what does that mean? What's your solution? Like, if you hate every single thing that's happening, what's your solution? And they got none. They just want to be mad. I'm sick of them niggas, and they going to be the death of us all.
What are you going to say, Ika?
Yeah. I'm sick of, just looking at the demographics, the 55% of white women, the, what was it, like 20-some percent of black men, like, all of y'all that had the black squares up and down Instagram and all that, just miss me with all the performative bullshit, because, again, you choose that racist shit over us and our interests every time. So, like, I'm not interested in helping you learn. I don't want to hear anything else
you from can't white come women. To the
I had trouble watching Bow and Seduce because I did not feel sorry for y'all. It's terrible. But, like, 55%, like, don't talk to me.
50, that's it went up. It went up from 53 to 55.
Have it for any of you.
But actually, every marginalized demographic went up this year, which, again, was concerned. Like, my mom called me and she was like,
insanity.
He was like, yo, this is, because my mom and one of her friends and Mr. Eric, they were all like, this is y'all's election. Like, we're going to participate, but you all really have to deal with whatever comes on the back end of this. And, but my mother was like, yo, I these numbers, she was like, they're really scary. And they are, like, the under 30 vote, for example, was at record levels. Like, the voter turnout this year, period, was record levels.
It's crazy.
The under 30 vote was record level. But almost half of the white under 30 vote went to Trump. Yeah. So all them people who be like, racism is going to die out. Yeah, it's the age of influence. And he's
not with this generation.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll see. We'll obviously keep you posted on all of that. Let's talk about. I want to talk about John Gray.
We have to. I mean, the nigga.
Yeah, we gotta mention it. Just mention this nigga.
God, there, so, you know, God, John, is so tired of this nigga. God is like, my man, I need.
Please, in your fucking Instagram posts.
None of your fuck shit. Ever.
So John Gray's a megachurch pastor. Alone. He's a megachurch pastor. His church now is in Greenville, South Carolina. I forget the name of the church. It's in Greenville, South Carolina. He was the assistant or associate pastor at Lakewood in
Houston. And associate pastor, yeah. There's a bunch of them, but he was an associate pastor.
Yeah, he's an associate pastor at Lakewood in Houston under Joel Osteen. He left and went to South Carolina when he still had his reality show on OWN. It was like a big thing. They were moving and leaving their family, a lot of their people behind, and da-da-da-da. And then since he's moved, and things were happening pre this, but definitely since he's moved to South Carolina, he seems to get caught cheating by every 6-7 weeks. And he goes on Instagram.
Literally, it's like quarterly.
It's like, John, it's time for you to do the Instagram post. He go on Instagram and he does these big soliloquies about his wife, his rib, and how he is not worthy of her love, and she raised him from a boy to a man, and how he's got to pray to God, and he's got to work on himself, and please pray for our family. And then 6-7 weeks later, he'll put out a little video, or somebody will get caught slipping in the DMs to some gal, talk about, let me see your titties, and I want to, take you on a vacation or something. And this, so he got caught cheating again, like last week.
All I saw was the apologies. I don't even know what he did, but
he had just got caught cheating before that, maybe September or something.
I can't keep up.
It's been since COVID. I think it was over.
Yeah, definitely since COVID.
We was in shutdown. Like, I don't even think it's been a full fiscal quarter. Like, I don't even know if your books flipped over yet. Like,
the Lamborghini truck he bought her. the nigga shit was so raggedy. The last time he had his son in the car on FaceTime and some woman telling the son to tell the woman how mommy don't cook. Telling the son to tell mommy, tell the woman how mommy don't cook and all you eat is frozen pizzas. I'm like, nigga, you don't understand none of the rules of the game.
But let me tell you how my house would have been turned upside down if you had my son on camera.
This is what I'm saying. I'm like, how did she stay after that?
Tell you the fucking
how did she stay after that?
That would have swept.
She's not going anywhere.
house.
Why do you think she's not going to go nowhere, Inka? Is she just because she's damaged?
A national profile is his first lady, and she's not yet.
Thank you.
He hasn't yet ascended to the point where she can stand on that by herself.
Because this is her job. Because this is what she does. She's not going anywhere. This is the brand. She is the one who is going to raise her man up. She is, you know, this is what they do.
Be crying in the pulpit and all that bullshit. You remember the time before this one? The joint with T.D. Jakes. Remember T.D. Jakes laid some hands on him at one point.
He was not crying.
And all this bullshit.
And the last time, in the apology, he said. Oh, I'm sorry.
He said he never did what now?
He said that Aventa was the only person he'd ever slept with in the apology.
In his life.
That's what the nigga said.
I believe that.
You do.
Think he's just tricking and he's just getting hand jobs?
He can't handle the attention from any lady.
He's getting hand jobs. You know what? I can see that though, because somebody else was asking me. Somebody literally texted me
yesterday. Rough face.
And I was like, I can see him being an easy trick. Like, yeah, I'll let you rub on these titties if you give me $500. And I'll let you sniff the coochie if you pay my rent. And I think
he's lifting that belly up for nobody.
Piece to really Ramon on Twitter, because she was like, I show him a titty for some.
But we saw it. He cash app. He Apple paid this chick $250 to be like, prove that your bra size is whatever, whatever. So
nigga got excited about a bra size. Not the actual titties. The bra size. Like, my nigga. What are we doing?
If tricking is your thing, that's what we call a mark. That nigga is a mark.
That nigga got excited about a
that
bra
nigga's
size.
Buying Birkins.
Yeah. What you about to say, Sean?
Brian gonna say nothing. I will say
I believe when he says that's the only person he slept with.
Yeah. Wow.
I've said this before. You know, we talked about this. Like, he definitely gives off the vibe as a dude that is super excited about any level of woman attention, particularly a certain looking kind of woman, right? Yeah. Like, you know, so he's definitely smitten is probably a good word. And yes, I would not be surprised if that Cash App is flooded with
with DMs.
Heart emojis and thus.
Yeah. I mean, the one
we call in my old church, holy by default.
Oh. Like,
I don't know that he has a lot of options. So he might be sliding money out and being this great, holy, faithful man because...
Who else gonna mess with that? I'm gonna just mute my mic.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, first of all, he said after his last apology a couple months ago that he was gonna take a break from the pulpit. I'm not sure if he has. I hope he has. But also, like, at what point, if nothing else, and I said this before, if nothing else, the sloppiness more than the actions
is the problem.
And it's like, how often are you going to keep embarrassing your wife? Like, not even cheating on your wife, embarrassing your wife. Because to me, that actually, and I know this says a lot about me, but it's the embarrassment for me, right? Like, I don't go looking for shit that my nigga is doing. It's when patterns change. It's when shit gets loose. It's when things start feeling different. That's the problem. I could have been in relationships with motherfuckers but having a whole other shit. I have no idea. You know why I have no idea? Because ain't shit change at home. Right? And it's like it's the embarrassment. It's the public embarrassment. And it's like, how many times are you going to say the same shit to her? Like, and talk about God's grace and God's mercy, like, but there is such a thing as abusing that. And I feel like he wants to get caught. I technically feel like this nigga wants out of the ministry, he wants out of his marriage, but like, Inka was just saying, what's the option? What's the alternative? There's nothing else he can do.
See, the
stump, I don't think he wants this life. I think he wants to be an author and be on TV and be a respected public figure. I don't actually think he wants the responsibility of ministry and marriage.
The scumbag in me says, if I was that type of nigga, I'd be in Aventa's DMs. because she's ready to get got right now. True. She's ready to
I
get
think
got.
Her DMs not, might be flooded.
I think niggas are sliding in there like, hey, Deacon Charles talking about, hey, I'm about to head over to the Olive Garden.
I'm going down to the Golden
Corral.
Oh, no. If you want a little bite.
Yeah. I'm about to go to the Cracker Barrel. I'll pick you up.
Aventure is still in Houston. They might be like, come meet me down at Papa Do's.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I get you them fried shrimp. You're like, I'll be over to the house shortly. So, yeah. I want to say, obviously, we got to say peace and love to Alex Trebek and his family. He passed away, 80 years old, was it pancreatic cancer? Was it pancreatic? It was some form of cancer. I forget which one. It was a pancreatic. Yeah.
He was one of the good white men, one of them good white men.
Yeah. Gave a lot to black causes all throughout his life. And just, you know, from all accounts, just a great, solid guy, you know, just a genuinely, you know, nice person. You know, hosted Jeopardy for, 25 years, if not more.
It was like 40 years.
Was it 40?
Wow. I think this is like season 38 or something.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm short of them. I'm very curious to see what they'll do moving forward. I mean, Jeopardy is such a money-making show. They're not going to stop it. I'm just curious to see who they'll get to. I read somewhere they're talking about maybe getting the cat that won all the money, Ken, to be the host.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, to be the host. Yeah, because he's a well-liked figure too.
And I believe Alec was had input. I think because he was already, I think, talking about his transition out of the show.
Oh, okay.
Because he knew.
Yeah, he knew. Because he had battled back.
He had aggressive cancer, and they knew it. So I'd be very hard-pressed to think that they had lined up who would be a replacement for him at some point. Because, I mean, you know, God bless, even if he didn't die, you know, at some point you had to assume that he would be way too weak to work.
You know, even just being 80 years old, it's like you got to start looking at something else at some point. I also want to give a little love to Blue Ivy Carter.
He did finish the season though. He taped 35
more. There's 35 shows that he taped.
What Blue Ivy do?
Blue Ivy Carter is narrated Black Hair Love.
Oh,
Audible.
She's the Audible voice for
Hair
Love.
She's the Audible voice.
That's
very
cute.
Yeah, I think it dropped. I think it's out. It's like it came out like this week or something.
It's out.
Nobody knew. I don't think anybody knew it was going to be her. So it dropped, and like Matthew Cherry, you know, obviously they did posts and stuff. So, I heard a little clip. She sounds really good. I mean, sounds like a cute little girl. So I just thought that was nice, and obviously great marketing to get her to do it because of not just to her parents and all that, but because if you remember, people were talking shit about her hair,
yep,
when she was younger. So it just makes it makes perfect sense for her to do that. That's when I wanted to mention that. I also wanted to mention, I saw some reports about this COVID vaccine that they're talking about. This 90
that Pfizer has. Says is 85% effective?
Yeah, they said 90, but and Fauci is touting it, saying like he's excited about it. He thinks they might have some test people for the public.
But also make a note that Pfizer is the one major competitor in this pharmaceutical space that did not partner with the White House in developing this vaccine because Pence immediately tried to take credit for it.
So did Trump.
And Pfizer was like,
actually, nah. Yeah, we ain't taking dime for y'all niggas. Fuck out of here.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I read some interesting stuff today. They talked to a couple of people who did the trials. It was actually 43,000 people who they tested from all over. They talked to a couple of people in the newspaper. I read about it online, and they said it's similar. The reaction has been so far has been similar to like the flu shot in that you get sick as fuck if you take this. They said like it beats you up. Like it's not like, oh, you take it and you just go to the brunch. Like you get fucked up. And then one guy said he took it. It took him down. Like, you know, the whole thing, the body aches, the pain. He said it makes you feel like you almost got a constant hangover. You just can't get your shit together. And then he said on top of that, he tested positive again.
Wow.
So, be careful, everybody.
I mean, but this is why there are trials.
Yeah. But they put it out like basically like, oh shit, it's about to be lit. Like Christmas time, you can take it and like you'll be able to go on about your normal life. And
no, I think what they're actually asking.
Well, they're only going
to
have
petitioning the FDA to accelerate the trial process. Was that what it was, Sean?
Something like that, yes. And they're saying that they're only going to have about 50 million doses worldwide.
Okay. Oh, worldwide.
By the end of the year. Okay. And they're saying that they're, you know, I think it was something. Yeah, only 50 million doses. Apparently, it has to be stored at incredibly cold temperatures. And so they're trying to figure out logistically what that means for shipping, what that means for storage. You know, some of these hospitals, they don't have the capacity. So and we kind of know what that means. We know that there are going to be a shit ton of these doses sent out. A ton of them will go bad. Mm-hmm. People will have, you know, they will get these vaccines that aren't going to be as effective because mm-hmm. they're going to have that lapse. And we'll just, you know, we'll see how this progresses. I mean, we, you know.
There's going to be a lot of people pulling up to Miss Ernestine's house to put it in the deep freezer.
Well, look.
Miss Ernestine, you got room in that deep freezer next to them porgies for the vaccine?
White folks want to be first in line all the other goddamn time. So y'all go right on ahead and let me know how this first round.
Let me know how that work out for you. And meanwhile, cases of COVID are like fucking rampant. They're just flying through the roof. And
it's back to like March, April levels. It's insane.
Yeah,
100,000 a day.
It's actually worse than March, April levels. It's actually worse.
It's 100,000 a day.
Yeah, and it's everywhere, but it's definitely like hitting the Midwest really bad. And I haven't seen anybody say this, so I'm just talking shit. But I gotta feel like some of this Midwest shit. I know in North Dakota, it's directly, but some of this Midwest shit is directly because of Trump.
Oh, you're not talking shit. They've said this. There have been over three. There have been a couple. I want to say there's been. It's this. I realize this is a wide disparity, but there's either 30,000 or I think it's 30,000 cases that have been directly linked back to Trump.
To rallies.
In terms of contact tracing. It's probably more than that by now. That was the header like a week and change ago. Mm-hmm. That was the header like maybe even 2 weeks ago. So it's probably more than that now. And a few deaths. I want to say like
seven
deaths.
Yeah. Like and that. I know North Dakota got fucked up because back in the summer, they did that bike rally up there.
Yeah, I've heard
those bikers came up there and they just like spread like wildfire. So so Fauci's saying no Thanksgiving. He's saying everybody stay home, do Zoom Thanksgiving.
Ain't nobody gonna listen to that shit.
Only do
we're
it.
We're staying home.
I mean, I am, but the majority, not maybe not majority, but a lot of Americans are not listening to that shit.
Yeah, I talked to my Aunt Penny the other day. I don't know, bro. I don't think it's gonna pop off.
I know so many people who are moving like normal again, because their areas were in phase four. I mean, we already know that Atlanta is acting like COVID just never happened.
Ridiculous.
Point blank, period.
Yeah.
But I know people even here, like out on Long Island, who's been in phase four since the summer. Like, niggas is just acting like it's whatever. Like,
I don't know. I think I might go over to Popeyes and get that cage of turkey and be here watching Netflix. Keep it pushing. Better.
I'm gonna bake me a ham, which I did at the top of the COVID shutdown. I'm gonna bake
me a ham. And send me a plate.
I got you. I got this by place.
Okay, so real quick, I was gonna call you last night, but it was late, and I ain't want to try to be like, "Fuck up this nigga," because you know, Welcome to Plattsville came on last night, the new season,
and I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. I was just flicking through, and I was like, "Wait, this is new." Yeah, it came on last night, season 2, episode 1.
This Is Us last night. We had a little date on the porch.
Okay, catch up to it, and we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it next week. But it started last night, and the oldest boy and his wife have had no contact with the family since last season. They're like totally separate. They don't fuck with them at all.
Oh my god!
Yes,
yeah, don't spoil it for me. Let me watch.
Okay, some other shit too. But we'll talk about it next week.
Okay, wait. Before y'all get into new shit, The Undoing on HBO.
Is it good?
That's on my list for today.
God. Oh, my God.
I mean, I love Nicole Kidman.
Creepy.
And I like, who's the other guy? Is it Hugh Grant.
And Donald Sutherland. Did any of y'all watch Big Little Lies?
No, I never watched it. I heard it was great though.
So it's like the East Coast version of Big Little Lies. It's high rich white people drama. I'm here for all of it. I love it.
It's already on
episode 3. I'm all in this shit.
Okay, and also, so it's easy to catch up.
I'm gonna catch up.
And I finally watched The Queen's Gambit. Outstanding.
It's great.
So oh good, right?
God, it's so good.
I didn't finish it yet, though. So you don't go to the end.
You gotta feel it.
Because some cool shit happens at the end. But like, but The Queen's Gambit is
dope. I watched Seduced this week.
Okay, what did you think?
Okay, so yeah, you do need to watch The Vow before you watch Seduced, because that shit went from 0 to 100
right?
Real quick.
Real quick. And I feel like you needed that setting of The Vow. I feel like watching The Vow first, because the people in the middle of The Vow, because The Vow was like a story constructed by two senior people in the organization.
The Vow is like Nexium 101.
But it also helps you see how duplicitous it is, because you realized how these niggas were positioning themselves, right? Kind of like, we were victims too. Yeah. Not saying that they weren't, but I really feel like The Vow was preemptive to be like, let's get out ahead of this so we don't look as bad.
They looked crazy.
Because they look crazy. But also, like, The Vow skipped over some of the crazier parts. The Vow made it seem like Nexium was like you go to a Landmark or any other self-help forum, but then you get pulled into this cult-like activity only if you get into the very inner circle. Whereas Seduce was like, no, this shit was crazy. Like, from the door, it was nuts. And all of it was nuts. The teachings were nuts. All of the seminars, like, the shit was nuts. It's just, but the last couple of minutes of the last episode that I want to point out, one of the guys who deprograms cult members, like that's his thing, his specialty, was pointing out, like, I've deprogrammed medical doctors, clinical psychiatrists, you know what I mean? Like, don't think this is something that only certain kind of people fall into. Cults target highly intelligent people because they need the credibility and they need them to recruit, you know? So it's easy, I think, to watch from the outside and be like, that would never be me. But I see motherfuckers indoctrinated in the groupthink all the time.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen it during the election. You just may not think, what you think is that you're more enlightened than everybody else. That's how it presents to you, you know?
Let me tell you, I got recruited when I was young to be in the Dr. York. Remember Dr. York?
Baker Daddy?
Yes.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So my man, he's older than me. He's like one of the OG niggas. He got into it, and we started talking one day in the park, and then he started, you know, he gave me a book to read, and y'all know me, I'm into science fiction and shit. So Dr. York shit is all about, like, there was aliens coming down. So I read the book, and then we started talking.
So, like, Scientology?
I don't know enough about Scientology to know, but I know it's about the aliens and all that. But yeah, so probably. So we start talking. He started coming to the house. Yo, my parents, because, you know, he would come in the Dr. York outfit, like the all white with the turban. Yo, my parents was like, what?
Your mom was probably pleading the blood of Jesus over that whole
thing. And the thing is, like, this nigga grew up on my block. Like, my parents know him. And, like, his parents, they both passed away. Like, they all went to church. Like, they, like, know him. Like, he ain't, like, some nigga who just showed up. Like, it's like,
right.
I don't want to say his name because I don't want to blow him up. But it's like, what the fuck is he doing? And we used to have these, like, long-ass talks and shit. Like, and, you know, I found it, I never felt the pull to actually join. But I found some of the things he was saying to be very interesting. I would just be like, oh, yeah. That's kind of interesting. I'd be reading. I ain't got no more than shit. I just kept the practice. So I was almost down with Dr. York. Anyway, real quick, just want to give a shout out to Q-Tip Ali and Fife for the Tribe Called Quest 27th anniversary was yesterday, 2 days ago. Midnight Marauders. I didn't realize it was that long ago. I was like,
that makes me feel so.
Yeah, it was 1990. I guess it was 93.
93, yeah.
Yeah.
My freshman year of college, yo, we ran that fucking album.
Yeah, so, you know, just wanted to give them some love. And obviously, love the fight. I wanted to also mention there's a new show on HBO Max. There's two that I watched. One is called Industry. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. It was about so these young kids, basically they're like kind of interns at a corporate financial corporate firm. It's like a Wall Street business in London. Mm. But the main girl is from here. She's from America. So she seems to be like the protagonist of the show, and it's kind of like about their lives and what they're doing to try to make it in corporate world. And again, only one show in, but I found it interesting because I had never seen a show or a movie even to discuss that path. You know, usually by the time we get to in the financial thing, everybody's kind of balling or like making mad paper, or they, you know, like what's like boiler room or Wall Street, where people are like kind of getting money and they scam it. But you never talked about, like, you never seen it from like the intern trying to make it perspective. Did you get to watch it at all, Inka? You know, watch it?
Okay. I did not.
Yeah, so I don't want to talk about it, but like, it's like already started off with kind of like a little bit of a bang, like, oh shit, where did that happen? Like in the first episode. Again, I found it very interesting. Wow. Yeah, I found it interesting. So, like, you get a chance to watch that. And then there was another show I watched called The Cost of Winning, and it's a documentary about this high school football team in Baltimore, Maryland, that is like ranked, well, at the time of the show, they were ranked number 2 in the country. But
what school?
St. Francis. Have you heard of them? Yeah.
Yeah.
You heard of them? Yeah. But it was really interesting because I see all these kids from the inner city of Baltimore, but because they're not part of the MIAA, which is the Maryland, whatever kind of high school football association, they're allowed to recruit kids from other places.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because the MIAA wouldn't allow them to be in because they were like, they're too good. They're beating the shit out of kids. Like, they're beating teams like 55-0. You know what I'm saying? And so teams didn't want to play them anymore. They was like, yeah, we ain't playing y'all. Y'all are killing us.
Yeah.
So they can recruit kids from other places.
Baltimore is, like, people sleep on that district, but Baltimore, a lot of great athletes come out of, like,
a lot.
Basketball, like Poly and Dunbar.
Yeah, Dunbar. Yeah.
Powerhouse. Yeah.
Like, so I mean, again, it's only the first two episodes, but it's very interesting because there's a coach, this white guy, who's from Baltimore. Older guy, looks like probably in his 60s, you know, typical looking Baltimore guy, big, heavy set guy with the buzz cut, like, look like fucking Crawford Road, you know what I'm saying? But he said he grew up really fucked up and poor, and he was, you know, he was twisted, and he said he got a couple breaks and he made it. But what comes out is he funds the whole program. Like, he funds the team. He built homes for the kids to live in, especially the kids who aren't from the area. He pays for that. He pays for their tuitions. He pays for their food. He pays for everything. And come to find out, this motherfucker was a hedge fund guy. So he got wild money. Like, he pays for their travel. The guy said last year that they spent $300,000 all out of his pocket.
I think education funding in Maryland has been up and down for years and years. Like, even on the ballot this time, they had, expanding to sports betting in Maryland so that the revenue could go to Maryland schools.
Okay.
We used to be number one in education in the nation for, like, a long time, between, like, one and, like, the top three. Mm-hmm. And somewhere it kind of fell off. So it's interesting that, like, he's funding
all these things.
Like, I'm going to check it out because...
Yeah, you know. And they traveling. Like, they go to California to play a team. They go to Florida to play a team. Like, and he's paying all of it out of his pocket. Like, he's, you know, it's crazy. So, you know, so I was like, how the hell has he got all this money? But he was a hedge fund guy. So he made a gang of bread and he quit, and this is what he does now. He just coaches the team. So I thought that was interesting too. Did you get to check it at all, bro? The Cost of Winning thing?
No, I did. Okay. Well, you just said that to me last night.
Yeah, it was late. Yeah. Check it out though, like, for next week. It's interesting. Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it.
Did you guys catch Dave Chappelle on SNL? Anybody catch the
model? I did. I was going to bring that up. Yeah, I did. Oh, what did y'all think about it?
I thought it was hilarious. We was in here with tears in our eyes crying.
Yeah. What did you think about his monologue?
I thought parts of it, you know, They've always got to put that one part in there. They've always got to put that one part in there where...
to make niggas mad.
It's on innocent. Yeah. I think the thing that is annoying is that I can tell it's intentional, you know, because you can see he even had it. Like, I thought we were doing a comedy show, Lauren, you know.
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, parts of it were really funny and really good, and the clothes, I thought, brought it back. But mm-hmm. I'm just like, I don't know. It's just there are parts of Dave's comedy that, to me, come from a place of disconnect. Like I am disconnected from the real world, and I actually don't give a fuck. Y'all gonna just deal with it instead of like a desire to see why the shit might be off. It's like it's part of his joke now. Like the last time I saw Dave live, which was in 2016, which was in February 2016, he actually was like, you know, I'm rich, so technically I should vote for Trump. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. that type of shit, right? But yeah, I don't know. Like I've always been a fan of Chappelle's comedy because I thought it was very smart, and I thought there was always an intention to the offense. Like if it was gonna offend you, he would get like right there and like yank it back, and you would see there was a point. But now I feel like sometimes he goes
over the line.
It's just offensive for the sake.
Yeah, it feels like he's going for low-hanging fruit sometimes, and I just think he's better than that.
I could tell, like, watching the show, it felt like I could almost tell, like, the skits that he wrote on and the skits that he didn't.
I thought that Aunt Jemima...
I was about to bring that up. I thought it was fucking brilliant.
Especially even with Count Chocula, where he was like, I'm literally this chocolate. And they were like, nah, he gotta go too. This nigga gotta go.
Look at his lips. And then Dave broke character. He's like, look at Pete Davidson's lips. Like,
right, look at Pete Davidson's lips.
his teeth fell out and shit.
Did you watch it, bro?
I watched the monologue, and I turned it off after... a few minutes.
My nigga right there. I think it's something like that.
You know.
God bless.
I literally took the words right out of my mouth. God bless. Dave to me, listen, obviously he's great at what he does. But Dave, it's a lot of his stand-up and a lot of his material now, I don't necessarily find funny. And I don't mean that like in, you know, like in a cynical way, like it's not an enjoyable thing. Like when I watch a comedian, right, like I'm already sort of, I'm ready to go to laugh. You know what I'm saying? I'm not necessarily looking for every joke to have this pointed social commentary that it seems like he's done. And he's gotten to the point now where I feel like the sophomore humor and sort of the low-hanging fruit that he does is his attempt to sort of balance out that social commentary with some level of comedy. And it's so extreme to me sometimes. And again, you know, I'm not saying that I don't get what he's saying, and I totally do. But some of these jokes that, you know, let me not even say jokes. Some of the content is just, you know, it could be a little cumbersome, right? Like, you know, it's a little, you know, it's a lot. And I don't feel like I'm watching a comedy show. I feel like I'm watching an old nigga give me social commentary, you know, in his own space.
I felt like when I watched the monologue, I almost felt like I was watching him working out stuff. Like I felt like he's like what he did on Saturday Night Live is still unrefined, and he's going to work it out. And then maybe the time he does his next special, it'll be tighter and, you know, more concise. And I feel like he wrote it that week. You know what I'm saying? I feel like he like wrote it. I was like, listen to a demo.
I love that sort of unfinished raw comedy. Did you guys check out, there's a docuseries on, I think it's Showtime, about the Comedy Store.
Yeah, I've been watching that. Club. It's really good, yeah.
It's really interesting to see, like, the comedians talk about their process and, like, what the store is meant to them. And, like...
And how they didn't say how Richard Pryor would come to the Comedy Store and bomb. Because he was working.
Yeah, and just, like, work out shit, trying to get a tight hour.
It wouldn't be funny at all. And people are like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then it would go and go and go. And by the time he got to doing the show, it'd be like, oh, shit. That was that shit he said, but he flipped it and tightened the belt, and then he got to the point where it was actually funny.
So, but that's the thing, you gotta, as a comedian, you gotta work out, which is why I think comedians, including Dave, which by the way, I thought this was actually one of the funniest parts of his monologue when he was talking about the shows that he's been doing in Ohio, right? And when he was saying that the white people are like, come here, honey, the guy from the grocery store is on TV. He's like, no, you dumb motherfucker. The guy from TV is at the grocery store or whatever. But that's, I think, the hard thing for comedians is that they have to find a way. And this is why we've talked before about why some Instagram comedians don't translate to stage. Because a bit that you can do and edit for timing and effect is very different than a bit that you have to actually play off of real time response from the audience and learn how to time that out. And I think
technology has killed the stand up comedian though. Honestly,
you have to be able to control
privacy and working your shit out.
Yeah, you have to be able to control that room with the phones and stuff, which is why when you go see comedy acts, especially ones that are going to end up like HBO specials or something, they actually like really monitor if you're recording or taping or anything like that. But yeah, that's the thing. So I feel for comedians who have had to find a way to still, it's not like an artist or recording artist, you can just be in the studio and grind that shit out. Like you have to, it's like a muscle. You have to be in front of people. Mm-hmm. That's what Eddie was talking about, why it's going to take him so long to do stand-up again, because it takes a year to put an hour together. You know what I'm saying? It's a thing, for real.
Yeah. Did you watch Put a Ring on, Inca and Sean?
I did.
Yeah, I watched it.
What'd you think?
I know that new couple is arrived.
Yeah, he be the new couple. I feel bad for old girl because he's straight up gaslighting her.
Yeah,
and he's tearing her down. He's like, and she's beautiful, and like she's tearing down her whole esteem, bro. Like it's go ahead, bro.
I agree. He's absolutely gaslighting her. I don't know that I necessarily feel bad for her, and maybe that's probably the wrong choice of words because I don't feel good about what he's doing. But she has free will here, right? Like this is a 2-year relationship. They don't have children, right? What has you so enamored about this nigga? Like he seems very regular. Like I just
very regular.
Yeah, like that nigga is like, you know what I'm saying? Like he's like
worked down to the auto mechanic.
He's every nigga in the juice bar to me. Like he's every nigga. Like so, I'm just kind of I'm flummoxed as to why she's so wrapped up with this dude in such a way that she would take this, you know, abuse ultimately.
Yeah.
Do you think it has something to do with the location, though? Like, in I feel
Atlanta.
Atlanta, is it that hard? Because I think she could be up in DC.
It could
be. I've heard that
in Atlanta it is hard, especially the higher. I haven't watched the show, but for my friends who are single professionals and in Atlanta, it's harder to get dudes to commit just because the numbers are so much in their favor. It's not hard to date. It's hard.
I think that's two different ballparks of dating. And listen, for clarity and transparency, nigga, I'm not dating, right? So totally talking shit here, right? But I would like to think that a professional woman who is in her mid-40s, right, her dating pool and what she is looking for is not the same as this, you know, 27-year-old young tender out here looking to, you know, figure things out.
Yeah.
You know, again, you know, I just think it's two different pools. And I also think that we've been hearing about all of these, you know, these poor numbers in Atlanta. But then we also hear about all of these transplants. So it's got to be one or the other. Okay, it can't be everybody flocking to Atlanta, but then there's nobody here to date. Like, something doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah.
My understanding is that it's not the dating numbers, it's the commitment. Dating is easy.
That's kind of part and parcel, right? Because you don't really, it's chicken or the egg, right? You don't get a commitment without the dating part, right? So if a nigga don't want to commit because of the numbers, then that nigga wasn't going to commit no way. Or yeah, he would have committed to you in Maryland and you would have had 3 outside babies. So which one is it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's like, interesting about that.
It can't be both.
Yeah. What's interesting, one of the things that's interesting about this show to me is the fact that they're taking the secrecy off of people kind of being in a relationship but still messing around with other people. that they taking a secrecy off. It's like, y'all in a relationship, but we're going to make both of y'all date other people. Because on the low, that's what a lot of you niggas is doing anyway. So you're like, you still, I went out with my boys. And meanwhile, you went out with some girl you met on Instagram, whatever, or vice versa. I went out with my girls. And meanwhile, you sliding off with the nigga that you met down to the car wash or whatever. So they're kind of taking the secrecy off of that. And it's like, well, is your relationship really strong? We're going to put other people in your path and see what's really good. You know,
I mean, I think it's a fun show, but I don't think it's a genuine experiment in terms of the dating process. Mm. Right. Because it is still a show. So, you know, I'm looking at these couples and I've already felt like, OK, the only couple that's really going to stand out here is Hollywood and you know, Ashley. Girl. Okay, they're going to be together 25 years.
And not be married.
Get married. They're never going to get married, right? Word. Like, we know that couple. We know that couple.
Yeah.
The brown skin gal. Yeah, that brown skin gal.
She out
here. Yeah, I don't even know why they together.
Yeah.
She sold her wild oats and she's ready to come back and grab this nigga and settle down. And now he's shaky and she still is kind of up in the air to me. She still looks like, I mean, I want to marry you, nigga, but like, I mean, you don't want to get married. I'm okay with that too.
Yeah, it's niggas in my DMs right now. So let me know what you want to do.
And the one thing I will say is they have absolutely done well in terms of casting. They're all attractive people, right?
So it's
a great aesthetic for television, but also you do get a genuine sense of on the date. You know what I'm saying? Okay, this might be a person that would, you know, this is kind of in the range, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They don't got Jimmy from LinkedIn up there.
Jimmy. I wish I would get one Jimmy.
The dude she was doing the paint and sip with, he was fine. I was
and she definitely was like, I'm kind of feeling old boy a little bit.
But you notice, it was, I would go on a date with them, and he does check all of these boxes, but that nigga didn't make her feel that feeling inside.
She didn't have that
tingle, that shit that make you smile when the nigga not around. Like, he didn't give her that. That's what her, you know what I'm saying? Like, back and forth, all of this shit that they're doing. And I mean, listen, this is, the crazy thing about that particular couple is, like, they're not young. They're 40, and he's still going through the shit. I'm just like, yo, my guy, you really don't get to dictate here how she's going to react to you putting her through the shit that you put her through. Like, I don't know why that's so difficult to wrap your head around. Yeah. I don't really understand. It's like, I apologize, nigga, that was 2 years ago. Suck it up.
Yeah, that's a deep hurt, though. You go, you buy a dress, you get a venue, you send out invitations.
And then you nigga bails on you.
I need another couple years. It's like, what?
Yeah.
You gotta tell my grandma?
And then our father dies. So he's like, he's never going to get to walk me down the aisle, fuck around with you.
I don't know that they come back from that, though. Like, clearly, she'll start crying about it immediately. Like, that's right at the surface for her.
Yeah. Even
years later. Like, I don't know that they move forward from that.
I get the vibe that she keeps hoping that it goes away, like the feeling. I think she's like, I do love, so maybe it'll just go away, but it won't go away.
And like, you know, and to be honest with you, after 9 years, like we use the word dating, right? But after 9 years,
come on, bro, what are we?
You have intertwined your families, right? Y'all definitely running down, you know, changing the oil with your daddy and, you know, go pick up so-and-so. And your families are just intertwined. Your life after 9 years is very not just some regular dating shit.
And they're at that point where it's like they use both their names. Like, Hollywood Nash, you coming over? Like, how when actually good at that? Like, it's like they're put together as one thing.
And also, too, one of the things I noticed is that they're I don't want to say aspiring, but it seems to be like they're aspiring to be in entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very interesting to sort of watch this, because this does feel real and raw. And then to sort of see them, because I checked out the IG profiles, and to see them like try to be these sort of other.
Yeah, other people.
Other people, right? It was just, it's interesting. It's interesting to say the least.
Yeah. So, yeah, keep watching. It's a really good show. I watched Fix My Life. It was a mess. It was terrible.
That was a mess.
What the fuck is this? Like, what is this? It didn't even make sense. Like, it was like, what the fuck? What are we doing here? It was, I didn't like that show at all. I struggled. I stopped it like 2 or 3 times. It just wasn't grabbing me. So
I feel like Ayanla is just, she's tired.
She's
like,
checked out. She's
there's
checked
enough
out.
Of this. Yeah.
Yeah, she's checked out. You can tell that she's just like, let's get through this episode. And good luck to these niggas.
And I think she's at a point too where, you know, the producers have limited people to choose from. True. Right. So you know, you're really getting these cases of people that are just so out of this, you know, world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anybody got anything else?
I don't think so, actually.
You got anything? Inga, you got any shout out, Inga? You know, you ain't getting shout outs in a couple weeks.
Just shout out to my favorite veteran who's downstairs.
Okay. Aww. All right. And we always shout out to Ivy.
Shout out to Ivy.
Look at Inka like, damn Ivy.
Nah, she woke up dumb early this morning and turned the lights on in here.
She's still all old.
It's 5:30.
Flip the light on. Like,
scripture reading.
Word.
She usually like crawl into bed and like cuddle up for a little bit until we wake up. But mm-hmm. you know, today she's like, nah.
I'm up. What's popping? What we doing?
Oh, I do want to give a shout out to friend of the show, Charisse and her family. They are about to embark on building a new home, and I know that's gonna be a whole thing. So we just want to send
some love.
Yeah, that's gonna be a lot.
I'll just say one last thing. I mean, I didn't really bring up Real Housewives of Potomac because really not much is going on. It's kind of like Bro said, they're dragging. They're just dragging out.
Hold on. Nigga, we are on episode 15 and they are still talking about this fight and this gal's degrees.
Word.
Enough of this shit.
These degrees?
Fucking enough.
Word. It's like, oh my God. Every other scene, it's like Wendy's like, well, my 4 degree, it's like shorty. God, Jesus Christ, man. We get it.
God bless us. You make us not care.
Yeah, you make us not.
Sorry, I do have one last shout. Shout out to my mom, who I know is listening. So over the course of the pandemic, mom has been finding an outlet through art. She's been doing these beautiful mixed media pieces. And her work is showcased in at our town's Opera Hall right now.
Okay.
So they're doing like,
wow,
got a gallery presentation.
We about to figure out how to get these limited edition prints popping, get this Etsy store.
Yeah, let's go.
Because I've been even putting them together. I was like, Ma, you gotta do a showing. So her work is at our town's opera house. Well, her town's, I never actually lived there, but her town's opera house until I think the end of the month, and then it rotates to some other locations around the city. Okay. But I mean,
that's incredible. Yeah,
like they're beautiful, gorgeous pieces. And I mean, when I say mixed media, I mean, they literally are like three-dimensional, and it's a mix of, you know, fabric and acrylic paints and materials. And like, I mean, they're amazing, amazing works that she could probably sell for a lot of money. Which I'm about to become a
curator,
gallerist on the low.
Let's get mom a media kit. Exactly. Open her Etsy store.
Let's get her on CBS Sunday morning or something.
Yeah, we about to get this Etsy store popping for real. What were you gonna say?
I do got one shout out, and that is to the great Simone Sanders.
Yes,
she is mentioning Black women with this election and what they did, but I want to say she is a brilliant strategist. And I'm so grateful and, like, that she's able to do her work. Like,
yeah,
I'm praying.
She flipped that shit, and I have nothing but respect for Simone.
So I saw somebody online make a suggestion, and I think it would be fucking awesome if it came true. He said Simone Sanders would be an amazing press secretary. That would be awesome.
I know she's gonna be in the White House.
Oh, she's definitely in the White House.
Joe Biden's not an idiot.
Yeah, no.
So,
no.
Like, but her as press secretary
would be incredible.
that her mind for strategy is just unlike anything I've ever seen. And she's moving in silence. And
She's been low.
I just love it. Like, it's funny, like, I was just thinking, like, you know, people were shouting out Stacey and Keisha, who deserve all the credit. And I was thinking, like, people aren't talking enough about Simone. And just as I was thinking about that, she popped up on MSNBC, like, right after the, on Saturday, right after
I saw that.
Victory speeches. So I was happy. She was in her suffrage white, as was Kalama, Kamala. And so I was happy to see that. And, you know, and Simone's story, you know, switching from the Bernie campaign, to me, enough, the fact that Simone herself switched from Bernie to Biden, to me, that was enough to signal for me if I wasn't already going to do it. Like, you know what I mean? Not that I was ever a Bernie supporter. I was a Clinton supporter, but still. But I just, she, like you said, she's moving in silence and really just done the damn thing. And I think she's in her, I think she just turned 30. She might be like 31.
Yeah, she's mad young. I don't know how she'll, I know she's like 30, 31 or something. Yeah, yeah,
which means that, you know, she's got a, you know, a whole career ahead of her. She desires. And I'm really excited to have a White House staff with people who know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah.
Again, instead of random motherfuckers just in positions. I'm really,
so Bernie Yakama, if you can hear it, her as the press secretary.
I'm sure they've already had the conversation. Like,
yeah, that'd be phenomenal.
Imagine having press briefings again, like on a regular.
That's what I'm saying. Real, yeah. Like, and actually answering reporters' questions. And,
questions.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we're gonna wrap it up on that note.
Yeah.
Don't let Bruh stop your joy.
Don't let Trump shenanigans.
Devin don't take my joy.
Nor Sean's curmudgeon-y.
Exactly.
Stop your joy.
Brother, look at these niggas over here. Don't, you know, so
let's, no, like, I'll see y'all niggas on January 21st.
Exactly. Maybe.
Say, get off my lawn.
Sean in the back smoking a cigar. This bullshit here.
This is what's wrong with black people now. Y'all
wrong with y'all niggas now.
I think I might have said that shit, too. I might have said, this is wrong with these niggas now.
So, yeah, we're going to wrap it up. And everybody be safe. Wear your mask.
Stay home.
Stay home and chill out. And we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.